Hey there, and welcome to Speak Easy with Kendra Fisher. Join me each week as my guests and I take a deep dive into all of the conversations we've been taught are better left unsaid. No more silence, no more hiding. This is a safe space where anything goes. This week on Speak Easy, join me for part one of my conversation with Coach Chippy. We all know him as one of the most beloved content creators in the hockey world. But do you know the journey of how he got to where he is today? Coach Chippy, how are you, my friend?
Kendra, how are you doing? I'm flowing today. Of course we're flowing.
I'm great. You know what? I woke up this morning and I thought to myself, I better like get ready. You know, I'm getting on with the coach. And in my experience, like getting on with coaches means you gotta be presentable and stuff. And then I was just sitting there and I was like, don't think, just flow. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to rival you today. I'm going to get the flow out and I'm going to show up, make you feel at home.
I love it. The flow's looking great.
I was
trying to get prepared too. You can see in the background. I got all the. It's a mess back here. This is where I record all my videos,
and I love it.
I have to cover it with jerseys. There's stuff underneath all the jerseys. It's just covered right now.
So, I did the token like lean the artwork on the wall back here and put a plant kind of in the picture, so I'm not just whitewashed behind me, and we'll make it look like it was made to happen.
That's awesome. I put a little hockey stick there too.
I like it.
Background set up for this.
You know what I should have done? I should have pulled it over. True Hockey hooked me up with a whole set of gear a couple of days ago for the Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer. I'm dramatically trying to work in a new goalie glove right now. And like it's in and out of the oven. And I was like, I should just sit here. He would totally appreciate it if I was working my gloves in while we did this.
I guess you have to work those in because
they're horrible. I mean, players have it too easy. You guys just have it too easy. One of the many things, you know.
I don't like getting new gloves, though. I was never a fan of getting new equipment, like new gloves, shin pads. Only one I liked to get was the stick. Like, that was the only thing I liked
That's
to get
fair.
That was new.
That's
Everything
fair.
They else, even... you don't want to break it in.
I was that goalie that never wanted the newest gear. I was like, no, don't ever touch my gear. Just please don't. But True's hooked me up, so now I got to get into all their stuff, and I'm excited about it, but I am like... desperately working it in before the games on Saturday. So we'll see how that goes for me.
Yeah, True just hooked me up with a nice pair of custom skates. I got to get those broken in.
Aren't they pretty?
I'm pretty excited for those. I'm actually just looking at the box right now. The box came with super nice too.
I know. And like,
shout out to True.
I was like unboxing it. And I was like, oh my God, like they sent me the skates too. And I was unboxing. I'm not going to lie though. I haven't even like, I just am so overwhelmed by it all right now. And I haven't been on ice since they gave them to me yet. So I'm going to have to get on ice. That's
me too. We're in the same boat. I don't think I've
been on
the ice.
Let's rent some ice.
In a while. We got to rent some ice for
sure.
Let's do it.
We're in.
Okay. We're in.
Okay. Let's jump on here. So we met not all that long ago. I mean, we have Mitch Marner and the Assist Foundation to thank for this introduction. And I stood in the hordes of kids that were surrounding you to say, hey, before I took off there. And we had a quick chat, and I'm just like, I'm so thrilled to sit here and just have a conversation with you about your story, your journey, how you've gotten to where you're at, and, you know, kind of what's at the heart of it all. What's behind the TikTok and behind the Insta, and, you know, who is Coach Chippy, and how did we end up here? So let's just dive right in. I mean, tell me a bit about the coach growing up.
Yeah, I get growing up. It was you can kind of see with the skits I've been posting recently. The Coach Chip in school in elementary school. I grew up playing AAA hockey, so hockey was ingrained. I think I was on skates at the age of 2. My dad had me in the Leafs jersey and on skates, so he was gonna get me
even
in
the right jersey. Good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean the right jersey. And I remember when I first got on the ice, I couldn't use both my legs. My right leg was stronger than my left, so I would get out there and I would just be doing a one leg push, but I was good with my one leg, so I would just be out there like almost like on a scooter.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, oh, like I was good, I can do the stick handling, I was above
pushing in circles.
Exactly. No, I had the technique. It was just a one leg, like, and I remember my dad was like, yo, you got to learn how to skate with your other leg.
And then it's overrated.
Yeah, it's overrated. My right leg is still way more dominant, but it was the same when swimming lessons, when I'd be swimming, I would only kick with my one leg. It would just be like the other leg. That the instructor was like, I think I didn't pass my swimming lessons one year because I couldn't kick with the other leg. It was just my one leg was, so I'm trying to develop some coordination in my other leg, but we'll
I like
see.
It.
I'm still working on that. But yeah, it was, my dad had me on skates age two, and then I was taking lessons. And then by five, I got to be like really good. Like I was really good, like better than my peers, I guess, at that age. So I was playing house league. And I remember we'd play Saturday, Sunday. There'd be a Saturday practice and then Sunday game. It was house league. We were 5 years old. I remember it was at the NTR and it was a smaller ice and it was like just, I think it was, 5v5, I think it was. And I remember my dad went out, it was the one night and he was like, he's like, if you just skate around and just go around the kids, go around the net and just kind of hold it a little longer. He was trying to explain to me. I was like, dad, whatever. Like, I'm not listening to you. And then the next game, I actually listened to him. I'd skate around the net and I would just skate all, everyone would just be standing there like pylons. And I would skate that little extra, get the goalie off his angle and I would shoot it. And I remember I scored 13 goals in one game.
So goalies like myself have your father to thank for making this look good. Okay.
Exactly.
Got it.
So 13 goals in one game. And then, so I was pretty, like I was pretty elite player at that age at five. I was a really good player. And then I ended up playing novice AAA. And then all the way up to until I got to grade nine, I was AAA. We had a really good team. I was playing for the Barry Colts. We went to back-to-back OMHA finals. I think we were number two in Ontario at one point. Like, we had a really good team. And yeah, I just grew up playing hockey my whole life. And then once grade nine hit, I was like not the biggest kid. I was small. Like, I was very small. Like, it was, these kids are 100 pounds heavier than me. And they're heavier than me now in grade eight. Than I am now. So like that's kind of explained. Like, these, like, I was playing against men and I think I was like 90 pounds soaking wet and these kids were all like 180 pounds. So I was chippy though. That's why they got my name. I wasn't fun to play against.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that was grade nine, dropped down to double A. Then I played double A from grade nine to grade 10. And then I kind of was focusing more on school. And then I was like, oh, I don't really need to play double A even. It's still like, if you drop down double A, it's the same thing as triple A. It's the same travel. It's the same schedule.
Same commitment.
It was the same commitment. So then I just was like, like grade 11 and 12, like I was just going to stop playing. And my dad's like, just go play house league with your buddies. And then those were probably the funnest years I had playing hockey because I was like, there's no more stress. There's no, you can just take the puck for a skate. It doesn't matter. Coaches aren't going to tell you whatever. And yeah, so I played house league grade 11 and 12. And then ended up graduating and went to university, continued playing some intramural hockey. We won the intramural championship and then
amazing.
And then now we're in the men's league. So now I'm I haven't even been playing. I gotta find a new team, or I don't know if the season's starting up, but I'm excited to continue playing some hockey, but it slowed down a little bit. A little less hockey. That's the hockey journey.
Okay. And so school got through. And I mean, I've obviously done a little bit of my homework. And I mean, great guy in school, like had good grades, did well in school, went to university. Where did we go from there?
Yeah. Well, school was interesting because when I was playing the AAA hockey in like elementary school, my schooling, I didn't really put a lot of emphasis on it. So like, we weren't the best students. We'd be missing class. It wasn't really a priority.
Rightfully missing class.
Yeah. Rightfully. We got tournament teach. we're missing Monday. We're missing Thursday and Friday, actually.
And then probably need Monday off to recover.
And then Monday to recover. Didn't get any of the homework done. And we probably need a couple extra days to study for the test. Yeah. So that was like, elementary school, I wasn't too focused on it. I was more into the sports. Yeah. And then once grade nine hit, my parents, they had both gone to university. So it was like, that's kind of the path I was going to take. And my mom was super like on to the schooling for me. Like, it was like, no, we need to get these marks because my sister went to university. So she knew you got to get your marks in high school to get to university. So, I mean, grade nine, the grade nine marks don't matter too much, but I guess it was like, she was like, no, your grade nine marks matter. And so, I just got really focused on the school in high school. And that's kind of like all I was really focusing on. It was just like, I learned how to study. I learned how to, perform on tests. That's what it all is. Like, if you can study, memorize, like I would memorize everything.
Yeah.
I don't think I was really a good learner, but I was good at like memorizing.
Yeah.
And then
forgetting
about it.
Such a huge difference, right? Such a huge difference. and something we focus on, I think, in the education system today, something that we should actually probably revisit since we still do it the same way we did however many years ago, is that whole notion of, yeah, that's great if you're good at memorizing and producing the same material on a test, but have you truly learned it?
Yeah, no, I didn't learn it. I would forget about it, and it would be like, boom, next test, next exam, or whatever it was. And that was, that was from grade 9 to grade 12. I was just really focused. I always liked marketing. I was good at math, but like I was always kind of more, my dad was in marketing, so like he had the creative brain, and my mom was in accounting, so she had the analytical brain.
Okay.
And I kind of had a little bit of both. Like I was kind of good with the numbers. I didn't love the numbers, but I could do the algebra or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the marketing, there wasn't too many classes. I remember I did a grade 9 drama class.
Yeah.
I think this is where it all started. That's where it all started.
Beginning.
It was grade 9 drama, and we were forced to take it. So like every kid needed an art class. It was either you take like art, like painting, or you take drama. So I was like, all the kids just get their art. You need at least one art credit throughout your whole 4 years. Yeah. So it was like grade 9, everyone just takes drama. They get it out of the way. But I remember we had this one improv unit, and everyone was like super, it was such a fun class because you're just like, you're acting, you're doing these different units. And then I remember I did like an improv unit, and that's just where I excelled a little bit. I remember teacher was like, it was me and my other buddy. We were super like, I guess, outgoing at that point. So the improv was pretty like easy to do. And like, I think I got a 99 in improv. I think that was like one of my biggest marks in high school. So it was and then I just stopped because it was like, oh, we don't need to take it anymore. I'm not going to continue doing this. It's not cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't the cool thing to do. So I was like, oh, I'll stop.
Not cool. Won't be lucrative. This isn't going to be my career.
But realizing, looking back now, there's so many things you develop in terms of like conversation. Like if I would have continued that, I would probably be in a different spot even now, like just with like relationship wise, communicate. Yeah. It was all it was like how you can communicate with your hands and without talking, and then with your words.
Without your phone.
Exactly. Without your phone. I mean, now it's even crazier. Like we had the phones back then, but it was like, now it's like, I don't even know how these kids are doing it. Like coming up with these phones from grade 1 to grade 8. Like we didn't really have phones then. Like it was all kind of, you weren't allowed to bring it.
My 5-year-old can probably use my phone better than I can. I think he would probably know how to unlock more on my phone and utilize more on my phone than I do.
Yeah. The phones are, it's crazy. I mean, and now it's got to be like, you have to use it. Like if you're in today's world, you're coming up, if you don't know how to use it, as
you're in trouble.
You're in trouble because it's become such a big part of everything. Like, look, like we're using technology right now to do this interview, but there's interviews, work interviews, there's meetings. Everything's now become the virtual side of it. So that's kind of been an interesting shift.
It's terrifying. I'm not gonna lie, that whole like grade 9 arts piece, you left one out. You could do the art, you could do the drama, you could also do music as your art. I hid behind the flute. You didn't see that coming.
I wish I learned how to play. I love music now, so I wish I learned how to play an instrument, because now I just do vocals. But the flute.
And the flute. I think I could probably still pull off In the Jungle, but that's about it. Ooh. Like I love music, and I wish I was musically inclined, because there's like, it's maybe like one of my next to-dos. I'm gonna learn how to play the guitar or something.
Like just because I the drums, maybe.
You know, I don't think I have the rhythm for it. I've seen video of me trying to dance, and I'm like, probably never gonna happen for me.
Not a big dancer.
Not a big. I think I had a few days of thinking I was an okay dancer. They were probably the days before I quit drinking 24 years ago. So it's been a long time since I've considered the way my body moves when music starts to be acceptable. And
So you're a little stiff? Are you a little stiff with the movement?
I'm just a goalie. Like I'm a goalie. My body moves like a goalie. That's it. I don't know. And maybe I shouldn't even say that. I'm sure there's great goalie dancers out there somewhere. It's just not me.
Yeah.
It's not a thing.
What types of music though? What types?
I'm a country girl. Okay. I'm a country girl. Yeah. Okay. There's nothing I don't like. Like I'll turn on Eminem. I'll turn on, like, there's nothing I'm not biased against. I'm not really like death metal. I don't like the like incessant screaming. I'm just maybe I'm past that. It reminds me a bit too much of like my kids on a bad day. But otherwise, I mean, I'm a country girl through and through.
Who's like what artist?
I'm into like, I'm really into Morgan Wallen. I like Zach Bryan. Okay. I like that sound right now. That kind of old. Yeah. You? What's your music? How did we get here?
I love music. I see music's like, I think music, the reason why I'm here. My parents are like so different.
Yeah.
But the only thing they can jive on is
music. Yeah. They both love it. Music. So what is it? What's at the soul? Classic rock, okay.
Classic,
I like
rock,
it.
The Doors. Yeah. My dad's a massive Pearl Jam fan. So every game, going to the games, it was Pearl Jam. It was Rolling Stones. Gimme Shelter is his license plate. So
I love it. I love it. Compare dad's license plates. Mine's Goalpaw.
Goalpaw.
Goalpaw. He's a goalie dad.
Goalpaw. I like that. Yeah. I like that. You got to have the cool plates.
I'm not going to lie. Like, I even have it like tattooed on me. Yeah,
well,
right,
sick. Goalpaw. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Okay, Hijacked. I love it. We are going back to music at some point. However, we got through high school, and now we're kind of at that place where we're discovering somewhere between our like analytical brain and our creative drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are like polar opposites. So where did that take us to post-secondary? Like, where did we go in university? What were you taking?
Yeah, so I went into business. So like that was kind of like, I think I chose the marketing, like creative a little bit more route. I was thinking,
okay,
well, because I was like, business was, I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But at least with a business degree, I was going to be able to like,
you've got the basics.
I got 4 years to like do nothing kind of, and then figure it out. Like 4 years to kind of like, because you pick your major in like year 4 or something like that. Yeah. But I was like, all right, business seems like a pretty, I don't know. Like I was doing good in economics when I was in high school. Like I was just kind of like, all right, like I did marketing. It was like, okay, I have these kind of different pieces. I wasn't a good writer. I was never a strong writer. I think I always told myself that, and that's why I wasn't a strong writer. But I just somehow just always had trouble writing essays, being able to like conceptualize my ideas on like paper. Like that was, I remember I struggled with that like heavy in like high school. Like writing the essays seemed like the hardest thing in the world. Because it seemed like there was always so many rules with like your thesis. And then you got to like, I guess like now looking back, like I had a lot of trouble. Yeah, like putting my ideas onto paper and like staying consistent with them.
Almost like not being able to be creative with it.
Not exactly. It was like you got to structure it. Then you have to have your paragraph, body, conclusion.
Yeah,
and, like there can be no room for just a talking voice. Like it's got to be in this like educated, like you got to go. The research papers were, I couldn't do them. I just didn't understand how to take what someone else has already said. And then for me to put it in my own words, but I'm still like taking what it's not my own
without
words. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know exactly without plagiarizing because I'm like I don't know anything about the topic.
Yeah.
I don't know it enough to be able to put it into my own words yet because I'm was it 16 years old trying to learn about the what was the one law class. We're doing like a research paper on some sort of law and I'm like those papers for me I couldn't I struggled. I got through it, but I'd be asking my sister could do it. My sister is a lawyer now.
Okay.
So she was kind of more inclined.
The plagiarizing lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, I just couldn't do it. Like some people just could do it. Like they could put it in their own words. Like I just couldn't, like creative writing for sure. Let's come up with an idea. Let's talk about but the research papers, the writing was not my strong suit in high school. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll do business. Like maybe it's more of a creative writing kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the choice I made. I was like, yeah, like let's just do the business route.
Okay.
And kind of figure it out from there. I ended up going to Laurier and that's where my dad went. So I was like, I applied to other places. I applied to Guelph. I applied to Western, but Laurier was like a smaller school. Like it was more chill for me. Like I wasn't, too inclined on the partying. Like, at that point, I definitely was like going there for school. I didn't know anybody. Like, I didn't have any friends going into Laurier. And then I wanted to be on campus. So, like, a big thing was like, you want to meet people, like you want to be on the campus.
Yeah.
And you have like your dorms, then you're going to meet everyone on your floor. But they ended up, I guess there was a lot of people in our class, and I ended up getting the apartment style residence, which was off campus.
Yeah.
And then I got thrown in a room. Well, I think there was five of us. There was four of us living in this, like there was four rooms, a kitchen, and I just didn't jive. Like the one guy was dope, but the other just, they weren't sports. They weren't into anything I was interested in.
Yeah.
They had already had friends. Like, they were only lived like 30 minutes away, so they could go home and they weren't like wanting to make new friends.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was tough because like, I wanted to be like, that's a, you know, a big setting, your first year, like you're trying to meet people and they're like already have their set friends and they don't want to go and do any of the activities with any of the other people.
Yeah.
So I remember that.
And like looking for that social connection.
Yes. And they already had their group. So they were like, they didn't want to bring me in. They're like, who, like, so it was like kind of a tough situation that first year.
Yeah.
But then I actually met my buddy Mace. He was on the same floor. He was in the same program. And we met, I met him on day one when I moved in. I didn't meet him at the residence. I met him at like a party and I was like, oh, like what, like where, what residence are you in? He goes, oh, I'm in Marshall. I was like, no way. And I was like, what program are you in? He goes, oh, I'm in BBA. I'm in business. I was like, no way. And then I was like, what floor are you on? And then he goes, floor three. And I was like, yo, I'm on floor three. So it was cool.
Oh, you're my neighbor.
Yeah, he's like, you're my neighbor. And then he was into sports too. Like he was bigger into football and stuff. But like, I was like, okay, dope. Like someone in my program, on my floor, like now I can kind of like start building out this little friend group, because that's important. Like at that time, like,
huge.
You're just trying to like
huge
meet people, fit in. Like, I got no, like a lot of people, they go to school with people, they're like, they know someone from their high school. Like, I knew nobody. Like, it was like no one went to Laurier, which is surprising. But yeah, that was kind of like the first year. It was like learning. And then in that BBA program, like they try to like just weed you out. Like the first year, they give you these like massive group projects. Like, they don't really give you too many, like they don't really guide you at all. Like, they're just trying to like take this number and chop it, because next year we can't have this many students here. So they like, it's kind of like just like a grueling process. They make the exams or like they're just like five, they're in like lectures of like 500 people and you're writing an exam with everyone. Like, it was definitely like hard on the mental, like that. And that was kind of like, where my mental journey kind of first started, was like, I'd never felt like a mental health issue at all. Like, up until like grade 12, I was always popular. I was playing with hockey. It was, you know, I was going to the parties. Like, I fit in and I was comfortable. I grew up in Barrie and it was like the spot. But then now I'm in a new place, no friends, and I'm kind of trying to get through this new experience in life. And that's when I think became overwhelming. I was trying to fit in. I'm trying to drink and my body doesn't really react well to it.
Yeah.
And then now I'm smoking weed and I'm just trying to fit in with like that whole scene at culture, trying to meet people.
Yeah.
And I remember that like first year was tough because I'm trying to get the marks, trying to meet friends. I'm trying to fit in socializing at these parties when I'm not necessarily comfortable in my own skin yet.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to go out. And so instead of, you know, going out, and it was like, let's just drink and let's just like try to like meet people to get some liquid courage, and then the cool thing to do is smoke some weed after, so we're gonna smoke. And I remember I started smoking, I wasn't like smoking a ton, but I started in high school, and then by grade 12 it was like, yeah, that's pretty much all we would be doing. We'd be like, hey, like, let's just go, you know, we're going to the party, we're smoking, we're going anywhere, we're going to be smoking. And that's kind of where it started. And I kind of identified a lot with, like, I was listening to Pink Floyd music. I was like, yo, I like, it's like, I'm like a edgy kind of stoner kid. I was kind of starting to identify a little bit with it, like the hippie.
Yeah, found a label that fit.
Yeah, I was like, yo, this is cool. This is like, I'm expanding my consciousness. I can just chill. And I remember that was a big thing, was like identifying with like, yeah, the Pink Floyd, the hippie, the kind of counter. Yeah. And my dad was like, growing up. Like he was, he'd gone to Thailand. He had done his thing, and he stopped drinking when I was born. So he stopped drinking, stopped smoking, like everything. Like he was just sober. So he was a really good influence. So he never said don't do it, and was never like, oh, I'm not gonna tell me really what to do, because as a kid he had gone through the similar experience.
Yeah.
Whereas my mom never smoked. Like she was very straight, narrow, and like so yeah. like I was definitely like kind of more my dad, I guess, throughout yeah. that period, was like trying to discover myself a little bit. I was a smaller kid. You're just trying to like fit in and trying to find yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't think it really helped. Definitely first year, the drinking and smoking.
And how did that kind of manifest for you? So like there's so many things of it that are telling in terms of like where we're at developmentally and being away from home on our own, having to learn all that. I mean, you know, to get into the physiology of it, human brain doesn't stop developing until we're 25. So still not even able to really kind of manage our thoughts and our identity and all of these things with full capacity. And now you're also utilizing maybe less than useful coping strategies to kind of give yourself some confidence, almost, it sounds like. And so kind of how did that turn out for you in terms of that first year? Did you identify it? Was it causing anxiety? Was it a depression thing? Was it something you called home about or sought any type of help with? Or
yeah that was first year. Like I was definitely getting out of my comfort zone in first year. Like I was like, I kind of could be this new person because I had no friends. No one knew who my previous self was. And I kind of enjoyed that process because you're getting put in group projects. You're meeting all these different people. You have to show up to these meetings and you got to be reliable. And I remember like, I was definitely like dialed in first year. I was like, I'm focused. I want to be a good teammate on these projects because all of our marks are on the line. Like this is we're here. And I was like very focused on the school. Like it was like almost to a point where I was like, it was like too much. And I didn't really focus a lot on the other stuff. But when the other stuff happened, like you're just like, it was just you're going out. It was like you're living for those weekends to just get obliterated and wake up on Sunday and you're feeling like crap. And I remember it got overwhelming a little bit with just like the roommate situation was dicey. Like I wasn't jiving at all with them. And it was like this awkward, we weren't talking and we walk in and we're not even like, you're living with someone in your space and you're not even like communicating with them. So I think that became a little overwhelming. And then
huge impact.
I remember Fortnite came out and then all my buddies. So I got my Xbox set up in my room and I was a gamer kind of growing up. So it was like, that was kind of my outlet. I'd go in and just like, all right, I'm hanging out with my buddies from home. And I could just like get on there and chat.
Online.
I remember that became like a big connection. And for like, that was like the second semester of first year. I was like, I got my buddies back again. And we're just like, I'm able to just be myself.
Yeah.
And then I remember my buddy also was in, he took a 2 or 4 month trip to China.
Okay.
And so that was like by himself. And this is like, we were like 18 at this point.
Yeah.
So I remember I'd be FaceTiming him kind of quite a bit. And we were both kind of going through similar, just like, like I would say like probably depression is really what it was. Like, just like what is going on? Everything's changed. It's not like how it used to be. And we'd be FaceTiming each other and just like, I remember we really connected at that moment and was just like, like, cause we had spent every day of high school together. Like we were neighbors and we were just really close. And then all of a sudden we're not hanging out anymore. You're developing these new friends, but he was out in China. I'm over here. I'm like, I'm not jiving with anyone in this, in my dorm. Like, I don't really have any friends. Like, this is like, no one really gets who I am.
Yeah.
And I remember we were kind of going back and forth quite a bit and just, we were there for each other. And I remember that was kind of like, shout out to Benny. Benny's like, still my best buddy. He's like my brother. So it's like,
And so huge to have somebody.
Yeah.
So huge.
Yes. It was huge at that moment, especially like because of it was such a change.
Yeah.
And so I ended up getting through first year. I got all the marks because the big thing was like you want to get into the co-op program in year two.
Okay.
So it was like you need these marks to be like in, like you need like high marks to be able to even get considered for the co-op program.
Okay.
Or they're going to place you with a corporation in your industry and you're going to be able to get this head start on everyone else. And that was kind of how they labeled it. Mm-hmm. So I got the marks I needed to. And then year two, I was like, oh, like I don't even really want to do this co-op program, because it was just like, you got to do this interview process at the beginning of the year. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, I was like nervous to do it.
Yeah.
And then my mom's like, no, like just see if you can do it. So it was like the last day you could apply. So I applied. And then now it's like, you got to create your resume. And now you got to go do these, all these interviews.
Yeah.
And then I remember I got like the interview week set up, and then I ended up with, and then I would get so nervous before every exam. I would get so nervous to the point where I'd be like throwing up before an exam. Yeah. Like I remember first year I started throwing up before exams.
Yeah.
And I never really thought anything of it. I was just like, oh, I got super, and I'm so attached to this result, and I need to get this mark. And everything was on grades. Like grades became just my self-worth was based on what grade I got on this exam.
Yeah.
And I remember I threw up before an exam, and just, I wouldn't eat. I would never eat food. And like before, like it was just my stomach, but I never didn't know what anxiety was. Like I didn't know like this. I was like, oh, I'm just nervous.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like so much pressure on this, getting this result. And if you fail, then you're a failure.
And it's like, so weird too, I think, because it kind of gets normalized as an athlete, that whole like pregame nerves, right? Like it's not, it's not something we worry about. It's not something that's like a concern or something we should be, you know, looking into. It's like, of course I'm nervous. I got to get this done. I got to get this right. That's the expectation.
Yeah. And it became and so I perform on the exams. I'd get nervous. Then okay, like as soon as the paper got there, I can like focus, and I'd be like so like focused on like everything. Like I don't even know who this kid was. I'm trying to find him again. I'm trying to find this focus, but like I would get like so dialed in, because I'd study so much, and like, but it, I would wait till like the very last moment to do it, to study. I'd be like 2 days before, then I would spend like 7 hours straight like memorizing, and I would like So I was never I think that's like a, I don't know if it's a symptom of like ADHD, but like you kind of delay things until there's like a deadline needed. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and I'm even finding that in like with stuff I'm doing today, it's like, I'll just delay stuff until like I have to do it. And then it's like, okay, I got, so that's kind of with my videos. I give myself like half an hour, like right after the game, I have half an hour to film this, edit it and get it out. Like I have that and then I can actually do it. Cause if I like don't, like I just don't do it. Like it's just a, like stuff that doesn't interest you like immediately.
Just gets added to the next to-do list.
Just, oh, I'll do that later. I'll get bored, and I'll go to sit down and write an email, and then I'll be like halfway through, I'm like, ah, let me just save that and just go grab a sandwich and then come back. And like, something as simple as like an email that's three sentences.
Yeah. As somebody who lives with anxiety, I mean, you're talking to my heart right now. Like it's so obvious to me, because it is very telling of people with anxiety. And I think it's also symptomatic of ADHD, is that whole, you know, it's the kind of paralysis that comes with overthinking. And it's, you know, you don't have necessarily even a reason to feel uncomfortable or angsty about something that you're doing, but just as accumulatively until it gets to the end, you can't make yourself do it. And then you make yourself do it, and you're like this huge sweeping sense of relief, but then you realize that you've still got a pile sitting there because you've pushed it all back.
Yes, that's exactly like kind of what I would like. And I never like a diagnosed myself. Like, I'd never, like mental health wasn't like, my parents never had it. It was never like, they never, obviously they had, so like you go, but it was never talked about, and it was never like you got anything. Like it was just like, keep going. And I remember that that second year or whatever, I was applying for these things, and I was getting these, I was going into these interviews so nervous, my palms are sweating, like I gotta perform well in this interview. And I remember like I got in there, and I, you know, like the first couple I was nervous for, and then I remember like I went in, and the one guy was a hockey guy. Mm-hmm. He was like it was for this one firm. He was, and so we ended up, the interview was just him talking hockey with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, like that was dope. Like that was kind of cool.
I can do this.
I could. And so I remember the next interview I went in, I was like, I'm just going to keep it chill. Like, I'm just going to remember all my confidence I had when I was playing hockey in the AAA days, when I was like this AAA confident player. Cause I was very confident as a kid. You're growing up, you're the best at a sport. You're at recess. You're just confident. And I guess I slowly started to derail that confidence in myself throughout high school. And I remember I was like, oh, I got a little confidence back. And then I did really well in these interviews. And then I ended up getting like four job offers out of that.
Amazing.
out of that interview process just because the last four, I was myself.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, let me just be chill and talk and be less stressed if I get the job or if I don't, but let me just have a good conversation with this person.
Yeah.
And that was like, oh, okay. I got these offers. And then, I actually got a marketing offer that was really good fit.
Okay.
But it was in a different spot. So in the summertime, I'd have to move and be somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to do that. Yeah. So then I got a job in Barrie, but it was an accounting firm. And I was like, oh, I'll just accept the accounting job so I could be around my friends and I could go back home for the summer and not have to worry about getting a new spot.
And I mean, you already know you can do it. I mean, whether or not it was your passion, you alluded to being good with numbers. And I mean, you can always ask mom if you can't sort it out.
Exactly. So I was like, oh, let's just do this. This will be great.
And yeah.
That was the wrong choice. That was not, I went into day one. It was just the environment. It just was you're in a box, you're in a cube. You can't, everyone's hierarchy, everyone who you can speak with or how much they don't really have time for you as a co-op student. And I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting in here, they didn't provide any training. I don't even know how to do my own taxes. And I'm doing someone's, corporate tax return. And I'm like, guys, I literally don't even know how to balance the balance sheet. I've only learned what the university exam has told me. And I've
let's maybe not name where you were, co-oping. So nobody goes back and checks out whose corporate tax returns were done that year.
I remember it was bad. It was bad. I'm sitting there. But then everything's a billable hour. So it's you had to bill your hours out. So I'd be like, I spent 7 hours on this file and nothing got done. And they're like, and they're charging the company. They're charging these and I'm like, I shouldn't even be having billable hours right now because you guys haven't taught me anything. I'd be going knocking on the door. And this is when I really was started to kind of develop anxiety of just not fitting and not knowing what I'm doing. Feeling bad about asking people for help and just feeling kind of helpless, oh, I can't do this. And no one's helping me and I've not been trained. And I'm and then at that point I was still smoking a ton. And, I think my dad actually ended up he started getting these heart-ish, heart kind of thing. And he was concerned. He was playing ball hockey. And he started feeling something in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point he was going in, he had to go in and get they got this heart checked out where they put stuff, the dye through the heart to see if there's any blockages.
Yeah.
And I remember that came back and it was he's going to have triple bypass surgery.
Okay.
And that was a big kind of awakening in my mind. And it was whoa, that's serious. My grandpa had it. He got through it, but it was this is a serious open heart triple bypass surgery. And then it was we got to wait 6 months or four months or something. And, I remember that was added this anxiety to my life where I was
absolutely,
my dad was always he's always there. He's always goofing around. And now he's concerned, you know, and it was that became really concerning. I'm working at this accounting firm in tax season and I'm sitting in the office just worried about my pops. Is he going to be good? And I remember I came home one day and he was sitting in the back couch and he was like sweating and he was dizzy. And then my mom and dad or my mom and my sister are there and they're like, he's not feeling well. And I'm like, well, have you guys called 911? This could be he's got to go in for the heart surgery. This got to be heart related. This can't not be heart related. Call 911. So I'm sitting there in the back, calling 911. We went across the street. There's ER doctors that live across the street.
Okay.
So we bring them in and then the ambulance comes in, takes them out of the house, rushes them to the hospital. And then there was we didn't really know what was going to happen or what was happening. And I remember that was super stressful moment of just what the heck's going on? This is, heavy. And then it ended up just being vertigo, but he never had vertigo in his life. So it was how could this, for me, I'm how could this not be heart? We're he's got heart surgery in a couple months. This has got to be something to do with the heart.
Yeah.
But it ended up being vertigo and I came back. I was all right, kind of a sigh of relief. But at that moment, at that point, I was just full blown smoking weed every single day. And it was just became kind of my escape.
Yeah.
A little bit. I would just go and just smoke. And that was kind of what I was doing to kind of cope with hating my job. Is dad going to be okay? I got to go back to school, and I'm just like dreading going back to school now. And everything kind of started just like ramping up and to my own kind of physical symptoms. Like I had this anxiety, and then I remember like it was like I convinced myself I had a heart attack. I remember I took like an edible or something, and I got too kind of up there, and then I convinced myself the next day I had a heart attack. My heart was hurting. And then all of a sudden these physical symptoms started to like develop, where like I'm feeling like I'm having a heart attack. I started getting these like I'd go into the office and I started getting these panic attacks. I never had a panic attack ever, but it was like I was like worried about my heart, and then I was like worried, then it became like increase in what's heart rate, and then it was just like I got dizzy, and then I was like fully in these panic attacks. And I remember like I was in this office, like I was like, I can't even go into the office anymore. Like I started developing this like really like bad anxiety, like almost like these thoughts were so not rational. Like almost I was reading actually a Jordan Peterson book, and he actually described what it was, and it was 12 Rules for Life. And I remember he kind of completely described what was happening. Like these unrational thoughts were like just I would just go with them, and I would like kind of listen to them, and they were not like I'm sitting here, I'm okay, but these symptoms just kept like, you know, heart increasing and anxiety, and it was like almost paralyzing. And I fully got in this negative feedback loop with my mind and just convinced myself these things were wrong with me. I started looking up online like symptoms of a heart attack, or like
always a bad idea.
Oh my goodness. And I went down this deep hole, and that was like making me more worried. And my dad still had to go in for his surgery, and now I'm going through this crazy kind of like moment of mental and stress, and to the point where I had to quit my BDO job. I couldn't go into the office, couldn't leave my house. Like I was just like so much anxiety, and it was like waking
up. And at
that
point, did you recognize that's what it was, or did you still think like this is my heart? This is my
this is my heart. It was like I went in, I got it checked out. I went to the hospital. They're like, you're good. Like there's nothing wrong with you. Or like I would get all this. I got my heart checked. I got the Holter monitor put on for 3 days to make sure that it was nothing heart related.
Yeah.
But I was still kind of convinced.
Yeah.
And then during that, and this timeline's not exact, but like this is kind of all kind of happened. Like, years 2 to 4 in university.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like it was just so bad. And I was like, what do I do? I was going into like, my doctor was like, is there anything that you guys can do? Like any pills that you could put me on? Like, is there any like medication? Like I can't function right now. Like there's nothing. Yeah. And then it started leading to like that depression where it was like, I can't leave the house. I'm not hanging out with friends. I'm not leaving my room.
Yeah.
And all day long, I'm worried about if I'm dying pretty much. Yeah. Like, is there something like really bad wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
And that just took over my life for like months. And it was like, whoa, like this is the way I describe it is like, am I ever going to feel happiness again?
Yeah.
Like that was kind of that moment where I'm just like, I don't feel nothing's like there's this just dark. It was this darkness over me. And I'm like, just can something help me? Can something help me? And I was going in to the hospital, like asking, like, is there any like medication? And then so he put me on this anxiety med.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was just an anxiety medication.
Yeah.
And I was on it and didn't really see it. I was on it for like maybe like a month, didn't see any change.
Okay.
And then it was like, I went back in and they were like, oh, we want to put you on a antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication.
Yeah.
And I remember the first week, I got put on this thing was the worst week of my entire life. Like, can't even explain how bad that week was in terms of like your thinking, what it does, like what it did to my brain. Like it was like my thoughts were so dark, and I'd never experienced anything like that. And it was like to the borderline where I didn't trust myself, like just around anything. Like I just didn't like, and I never felt that way before.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I actually don't trust myself with being alone. Like, and that was like a scary, scary kind of thought pattern that I'd never experienced before.
Yeah.
And so I got put on those meds, and it At that point, I tried to stop smoking and I tried to like stop drinking. So they said you can't do that on those medications. But at that point, up to that point, I'd been smoking so much and every day, and it was like became like a part of my routine.
Yeah.
And to stop that and then be put on these things and that are rewiring my brain.
Yeah.
It almost got worse.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, now I'm like kind of taking these things that are messing with the chemicals. And that gave me anxiety too, because I'm now messing with the chemical balance in my brain. It's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just totally like borderline, like almost like schizophrenic. Like I couldn't, like my thoughts were like so
racy.
Irrational.
Yeah.
And I couldn't hang out with friends. I couldn't leave my house. I quit my BDO job. But at that point it was around 2020, 2019, 2020, right when that COVID situation was approaching.
Yeah.
So no one was like allowed to leave their house. So it was almost like
kind of hide in it.
It kind of gave me like, oh, like everyone's kind of inside right now. Whereas if this was happening the year before and everyone's like, I'm supposed to be at school, like you weren't allowed to be in class in person. So everything was online. So I was still kind of chipping away at the online classes. So for me, it was kind of like it was actually kind of a good thing. Like I was like, oh, because I actually can't go. I actually wouldn't have been able to go to class.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have been able to be around anyone. So I was like, oh, I can kind of sit in my room and get these classes done. And I quit the accounting job. I was like, I can't do this. So I just was like, nah, I'm out. I'm getting out of this co-op program. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
My mental health is just suffering so much right now.
Yeah.
And then, so I quit that. And then I did the summer classes so I could kind of get ahead or whatever, get caught up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of started to like feel a little bit better. Like I started like, I actually went and saw a therapist. Like I was seeing, like I was going to a therapist. And
at this point, are you still on medication or did you stop the medication?
I don't think I ever took it properly. Like I don't think I ever was like consistent with it. And like, I would like take it and then kind of like not take it. And I was taking such a small dose. And I kind of just was like, one day I was like, yeah, I'm just going to stop taking this. And I didn't talk to anyone. I was just, I'm like, for my own thing, I'm just going to stop taking it and see what happens.
Yeah.
And then during that period, I kind of really, shout out to Ben. He really kind of introduced me into like books and like reading. And I then got really into understanding the mind and like understanding consciousness, understanding society. Kind of during that period was such a weird time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a similar outlook on a lot of people during that time. And I started really diving into like history books and diving into like understanding, like consciousness. And like, I tried to like, you know, like how can I elevate my consciousness? Alan Watts is a big one I started listening to, and he really changed the whole course of my life during that time. Like really started giving me these thoughts and that I needed at that time, like about letting go, about, I started learning about myself, like meditation. I started like these things that I had never knew, like self-awareness was what I was lacking. Like I had no self-awareness up to that point. And that was like a big shift, was like, okay, like breathing, focusing on your breath, your thoughts lead to physical reactions and sensations. And like, it's a big loop. And I was like, I started journaling. My buddy Ben was like, you should start journaling. You should write. I'm like, journaling? I'm not going to. And then I started writing these thoughts down. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get this on a paper. I'm going to start to understand myself a little bit more, like start to build a relationship with myself, understanding how I was speaking to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the shift during that period where I just got enthralled with understanding my mind and understanding myself more. And because up at that point, I had no clue who I was. I was lost.
Yeah.
I was trying to fit in with the big crowd, ego. I would say I had an ego death, I guess, would have been the best way I could describe it.
That's a great term. I like it.
Yeah, it was an ego death. And it was like I had to now rebuild everything, rebuild my thought process, rebuild how I was speaking with myself. I went from my own worst enemy to becoming my own best friend.
Yeah.
And I started positive affirmations. Like I remember I started even catching like these negative thoughts and just like, oh, I can just think positively. Like I don't have to let that negative thought feed into another negative. I could just be like, oh, catch it. Today's a great day.
Don't even have to pay attention to it.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, I'm a talker. I
oh, no. That, are you kidding yeah. me? Don't be sorry. I love it. I you know what? I mean, I've been doing this for so long now. And we have a lot of parallels in our journeys. I mean, I spent 5 years not able to leave my apartment. I spent, you know, the anxiety and the depression, it cost me Team Canada. So I very much understand kind of thought patterns and the effects it can have on us. And I mean, I'm listening to you speak and it always amazes me how many of us have had similar experiences and spent such an incredibly horrible portion of our lives feeling like the only way to manage it was to be alone with it. Mm-hmm. And that's why these conversations, I think, are so incredible, because I think it gives people the opportunity to sit here and hear, I mean, somebody that, you know, not to ruin the end of the story or anything, but we all know, you know, kind of where you're at nowadays. And to know that this is the journey. I mean, I think it's so important for people to understand that there's so much more than just what we can perceive and what we can put forth for others to see. And I mean, I see what you do. And to me, this is far more important. Not that your content isn't important. I mean, yeah. I'm still debating whether or not, you know, Nisi ever beat Matthews at tennis. I'm trying.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, like I...
That was hilarious. I love that interview.
I'm still loving it. But, you know, I mean, I think it's awesome, but I think it's so important that people understand kind of that journey and what actually takes place internally in order to be able to achieve purpose in doing what you're doing. And so be a talker, because that's, yeah. I mean, this is the platform for it. So it's great. And I mean, so you're talking about, I'm going to backtrack for 1 second, yeah. just because I think it's so important on that medication piece. And that yeah. is, you know, medication's not for everybody. And I think that that's absolutely true. And I think one of the things that you just highlighted that is so important to just state, because I think that you'll have a lot of people who, you know, will hear this and may hear that. And I don't want anybody to ever think that medication's not an option as a resource mm-hmm. or as a tool. And I think that it is very valuable and necessary for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it's everybody's journey, but also just the piece of, I would strongly recommend working with a medical professional when going on and off medication. Yeah.
Well, the problem with mine is like, I got prescribed, like it was never like a, didn't get the breakdown of like,
yeah,
what I actually was going to happen.
Just
to
here
me.
It is, go have it.
It was just like, yeah, like, oh, like kind of just get out of my office. Like, here, yeah. I'll prescribe you a low dosage of this thing.
Yeah.
And
that can have such a huge impact on you. Absolutely.
It was a massive decision. And it was like, at that yeah. point, but I was like asking, like, I was like, I had no other option. I didn't feel.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't introduced to maybe a diet change. Maybe, yeah. Have you tried meditation? Have you tried yeah. journaling? Like all yeah. those options, I feel like probably maybe would have been better to maybe try yeah. before getting on something that serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where I felt a little misguided.
Certainly.
From the practitioner on that topic, because it was kind of just, yeah, here's a little like thing, but no education yeah. really on what this could do to you.
I think it's also really important too to touch on something that you alluded to, and maybe I'm overstepping in this guess or not, but when you're living with anxiety, the thought of taking something that's going to alter your body causes anxiety. Mm-hmm. When you are living with symptoms that are mimicking a heart attack or making you feel as though there's a real illness there beyond just mental illness, I don't think people understand the impact of having to actually convince yourself to take something that could alter that and then deal with the side effects of it and feel as though you're not now increasing your likelihood of dying. And a lot of people don't understand that piece. I mean, there's people will hand me something for like indigestion. And if I don't know the label, I'm like, dude, I'm not putting this in my body. Yeah. I don't know what this is. And until I read the side effects, I'm not interested in putting this in me.
Yes. So, no, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. Like, and so I think that education piece is huge. And I think that obviously having those conversations and working with your medical professional is huge. But also, I think the other really incredible piece that you're talking about here is that journey that is complementary to what we understand kind of those traditional responses to mental health being, which are medication and therapy. Mm-hmm. But there's this huge holistic approach that adds to them. I don't think it has to be in lieu of, it doesn't have to be a replacement, but I think if you're not engaging in all of it, you're not truly going to get to a place where you're learning to grow and move forward with that. Mm-hmm. So I love hearing you talk about like getting into meditation and journaling and all of those pseudosciences that,
yes,
you know, we don't necessarily get handed as an option. But how has that kind of played out for you? So this is like roughly 3-4 years ago. Now you're getting into kind of that self journey, which I think everybody who struggles with mental health has to go through, because mm-hmm. ultimately we don't necessarily have a system that's going to walk us through it.
Yeah.
So, you know, where did that kind of lead you? So now you've quit your accounting co-op, you're getting through university virtually by chance and an absolute blessing in your instance without anybody else having to realize that. And then you're now kind of engaging in positive affirmation, talk therapy, you said, as well as meditation and really that discovery of self. And that death of ego, which I absolutely love. And so where did that kind of take your path?
Yeah. So like I ended up graduating, like it was like, okay, I graduated. And that's kind of when the real journey of like the self kind of started to develop. I right out of school, I didn't go right into a job. I ended up just going back and like,
year was that? When did you graduate?
Year 4. I mean, that would have been 2021.
Okay.
2021, I guess, would have been when I graduated. And then I was like, okay, like I ended up just getting a framing job, like something completely outside of what I was going to school for. I was like, let me just go frame houses. I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to do it. My dad knew a buddy that was like, yeah, we'll bring him on and like teach him how to like use a saw. And I was coordinated, but I wasn't, didn't know any skill. Didn't even know how to use a measuring tape. But
inadvertently helping yourself too, because now you're being physical. Yeah.
It was the physical piece and like showing up and feeling accomplished after the day, like and learning. And you're just like, there wasn't this exam. No, you got to go up and you got to slap a wall up and you got to feel accomplished. And everyone on the team had to be positive. And it was a cool crew we were working with. There was only 3 of us and we were slapping these houses up and it was like real work. Like I never like I had done all these different jobs. I had done whippersnippering. I was all summer, but like this was like, no, we're working every day. We're there. You gotta
You're
get
earning
up at 5:30 a.m. Yeah. And it was such a good shift from this like school books thing. And then I was just like it was just like this outlet for me. And I was like, okay. And then at that same time, that's when I really started like learning, like reading these psychology. I actually was reading something I was interested in. Throughout all university and high school, I never was getting to do stuff I was actually interested in. So I wasn't learning these topics. But now it's like I started listening to Alan Watts and I was like, I got really like in like Alan Watts. If no one's listening to Alan Watts, go listen to Alan Watts right now. But he like just the way he just his he almost he's like an entertainer with his words. But he like, describes like he brings pretty much this Eastern philosophy and brings it to the West, and we live in the Western society is insane, and
you're not wrong.
This Eastern kind of like philosophy was like so freeing and understanding, like that he was talking about the rat race, how you're going to work to, you know, by the age you get older and you realize, oh, I just worked all my life away and I haven't really even done what I wanted to do here.
Yeah,
and like I remember a words he was saying was like, find something you're passionate about, do it every day, get good at it, and then make that your job, you know, because what's the point of living a life where you're going to go on living at something that you don't want to do every day to go on living? Like his words just started like, I'm like, he's right. Like, why am I doing something that I don't want to do to go on living a life I don't want to live? Like that didn't make sense to me. Just to check the boxes. Obviously some people are in different financial situations or in different.
Certainly.
I understand that.
Absolutely.
I had the blessing to be able to actually figure stuff out and take some time and live at home and like, and I understand that. But at that moment I was like, okay, like, why don't I take a step back? Like, let's figure out what I actually like to do.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, he started just like opening my mind on just all these different perspectives and like, just meditation, letting go and just like, letting go was the biggest one, but letting go from the past and letting go from the future, this anxiety about the future, and then this depression about the past, and was like, yo, well, just be present, just be here.
Yeah.
And that's where the creativity became, where everything emerges out of is the present moment and your ability to be silent.
Yeah.
And my brain in silence was not something I had experienced. And it was like this for the first time, I was like allowing myself to just breathe and be just be me. And I got so enthralled with like energy. It became this like, oh, wow, like I'm going to start like developing my listening skills. So I'd go into conversations to like actually be interested in the other person instead of like trying to like, or just like learning just like social skills. Like I was like, oh, yeah. I can bring people up with my energy or I can bring people down. And for the last 3 years, I've been depressed, bringing people down and, you know, poor me. And instead of that, I was like, okay, like what if I go downstairs and see my parents and like just be like happy and positive and like,
yeah,
this change of like my energy can be used as like a superpower to like bring someone up or bring someone down. Yeah. And then I remember this one time my buddy was coming to pick me up to go play basketball. And I was like, I just read something about this energy thing. And I was like, let me see if this works. I went and I just smiled. I remember I was like, I'm just going to smile and see if he smiles back. And if he smiles back, this whole thing works. And I just cracked the code of the universe.
That's it.
And then it was like, I went and I just smiled. I didn't say anything. I just smiled. And then he smiled back and I was like, oh, damn. I remember I got in the garbage. I discovered something.
Yeah.
And that's when I like the spiritual awakening started to occur where it's like, I just was like interested in people and interested in like shifting the way I looked at conversations, the way I looked at going into a public setting. I was like, what if I would look at someone at like the cashier and be like, oh, I like your necklace. You have a great neck. I just was so like interested in people now.
Yeah.
And like trying to make other people feel comfortable and the shift from being in my own head to like being in the world and being and like seeing what was going on, seeing the environment. And Alan Watts was like saying, he goes, you can't describe yourself without outside of yourself. So you cannot describe yourself without the environment around you. And then so therefore you must be the environment too.
Yeah.
And it was like an ability to like be of the environment and look and be around and like grounding yourself and being in the room. And I just really got on this crazy mental consciousness journey. And that was like kind of the start of the creativity.
Join us next week on Speakeasy for part two of this incredible conversation with Coach Chippy, where we dive into how he went from creating crypto content to becoming a coach to the pros and where we can expect to see him next. Thanks for hanging out with us on another episode of Speakeasy, where we believe conversations are meant to be had out loud. Share this episode to help others find our show, and don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join me at kfisher30 on Instagram as I travel across Canada and the US tackling the current mental health crisis with colleges and universities.